Hello, awesome people, and welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and the Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And today is a very passionate day of feelings, and to fully honor the day of feelings, I am so honored, truly, incredibly grateful to be welcoming an extraordinary human being, an extraordinary intelligence, a very bold and brave soul, an incredibly strong soul who has endured incredible feats in the dark side of American reality, thanks to the military-industrial complex and their cohorts, and has lived to tell, not only lived to tell, but is sharing with a clear mind and an open heart. She is committed to truth and has hit the scene running with her story. And it is really an honor to be not only part of sharing truth on this day, but sharing in the healing process of all of the children and all of the adults and all of the illusions, all the lies that have been spun in this American journey. Today, my awesome guest, my outstanding guest, is the lovely Anya Briggs. Hello, Anya.
Hello, Jamil. Thank you so much for that incredibly kind intro. Really, it's such an honor to be here today, and I really do appreciate all you and other light workers are doing in the pursuit of truth, whatever that means to them.
Yeah, whatever that means. And let's get on to what it means. You know, to find out what truth means, you have to think for yourself. You have to journey in the caverns of soul, in your own being. And learn how to be with your own feelings, with your own reality, and discern for yourself what is real and what is not. And you are very grounded in this, in all that I've read and listened to your interviews and stuff. It's really not about making up people's minds. It's about encouraging people to do their own work and find their own minds for themselves. And that is just really important at this time. Now, today is July the 4th. It is the American celebration of Independence Day, which is the hallmark of supposedly when the Patriots were successful in getting rid of the British crown. And there are a lot of reasons to question whether or not the American colonies were ever truly annexed, either legally on paper or in reality in terms of a landmass that never belonged to anybody in the first place. This is a universe that does not acknowledge land ownership. So for a violent, heinous genocide campaign to arrive here, to declare itself the new nation and then assume that it has been cleared from the colonizing nation is all fictitious on one level, in my truth. And what has always been challenging for me on this American holiday is that the genocide piece has always been omitted in this, you know, the celebrations with hot dogs and apple pie and, oh, aren't we just the great Americans? We stand on the blood of the ancestors of this land, and that's so cool. And that's never felt all right to me. And what has happened in my own personal evolution is that I've learned that not only was that troubling, but what the American establishment has been up to in its military might and its military agendas has just never failed to blow my mind with the depth and breadth of ugliness that it has been perpetuating around the world on its own citizens from the beginning as well as around the world. And so it's really time for some truth. it's really time to really admit that there is a devil, quote. There is evil in America, in the underpinnings of America, that has sought intentionally to harm. And when we can really open our minds and our hearts to really look at that, we will be making huge progress to truly bringing about the world of peace that we so desire. Until we are really able to look at that, I think we're just going to keep spinning our wheels and, you know, enjoying the fight. And well, for those of us who are really ready to put our guns down, this is where we welcome awesome people like Anya to tell her story. So that is what we are doing. We are celebrating freedom of speech. We are celebrating that supposedly in the American Constitution, we are granted this right, that we are supposed to be able to say whatever we want. We are granted the right to express ourselves. And that is not only supposed to be our right as human beings on paper here in America, but that's our right as a sovereign human being anywhere on the planet Earth, because nobody has the right to tell anybody that they can or cannot say anything. And if you don't like what we're going to be talking about, please exercise your sovereign power and change the station. Okay? That's it. You don't like it? Go away. It's not a problem. I don't take it personal. Anya doesn't take it personal. You are likewise a sovereign being. So please exercise your integrity and choose what you would like to feed yourself with on this day. So, Anya. This is all because, in part, we were inspired to this because there has been interference. You have endured tremendous violation to your person, tremendous violation to the privacy in your own home, in your own bed, in your own reality of your psychic world. And so nobody has a right more than you to be saying these things, and I'm saying them because I really believe that there are rights for all. So I want to back out of this yakky yak and really pass the mic to you, because we really want to hear from you. And in a little chat we were just having before when we started to have, we were just chatting about the astrology of rebellion in the air right now. And then you were mentioning something about what's going on in Egypt. And I think that this is really important and can be our beginning place to wherever we're going to go. Because what is happening with the U.S. interference and agitation and its own intention to create World War III in the Middle East, to me, is the biggest news of the day. And something that every concerned human being might want to really consider studying. You know, has American aggression gone far enough, both on the homeland and now in the Middle East? You know, there's a lot to be paying attention to. And so, Anya, tell me, what were you going to say about the Morsi? You were starting something about what was going on. Do you mind picking up there?
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't mind giving you some impressions that I'm receiving about this historic event that's happening in Tahrir Square yesterday and today. With the overthrow of President Morsi, I believe that actually a crisis has been averted, and that he supposedly was siding with the, and I'm not very clear on the Syrian front right now as to what's going on, but it's certainly being backed with U.S. interests by the, I believe it's the quote-unquote rebels who are doing unspeakable things to people. They're forcing children to watch their own parents' executions, I believe, with U.S.-funded dollars. I think that they're doing things like just incredible violations that I'm drawing a blank on right now. But I believe that World War III is not going to happen through the ways that the powers that be would like to have it happen, if it even happens at all. And I believe that Egypt is one of the linchpins that has been stopped from proceeding with this intention on the part of the dark cabal to create some kind of World War III scenario. I have always stated that, and I saw you mentioned on Facebook earlier that you had mentioned that it's really more about Iran and that continual attempts to create a nuclear incident or an international incident via Iran and, of course, Syria are allies with Iran and one of their strongest. And Syria, of course, is this the stopgap between what is the Middle East and basically the Western Hemisphere and the entry to Europe through Turkey and so forth. But what I actually see with Egypt is a renaissance that's going to occur. And because of what happened yesterday in Tahrir Square, you're going to see the roles of women, believe it or not, increased in the next 5 to 7 years in unprecedented roles in public image and government. And I believe that this may reflect some incidents that occur of a positive nature in Turkey and also in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia in the next 6 to 8 years as well. That will be a positive reflection on the role of women in the public eye in the Middle East and in North Africa. And in Turkey, of course. So that is a positive change that I see occurring, and I do not see an escalation of violence vis-a-vis Egypt through any Syrian objective that I see as a separate issue, perhaps. But these are continual squabbles and skirmishes that I hate to say the U.S. Department of Defense I think has some no small role in. The CIA has a greater role to play in this, I believe, in terms of international massaging of the issue through providing arms for these rebels who I believe are backed by the U.S. government. And this is just more same old international sort of COINTELPRO by the book, by the numbers, textbook operation going on to stir the pot, as it were, internationally. I believe ultimately that Syria will be a place, probably in about 6 months to a year, this will escalate further. Unfortunately, there may be some talk of nuclear engagement or chatter, as it were, in intelligence communities about the bomb. There may or may not be nuclear engagement, but if it stops, you can bet that it has to do with U.S. policy. And if it is increased or intensified, it may have something to do with Iranian involvement on some level, but I can't be too sure at this point in time the way the timeline is going. International politics and operations of a black ops nature or of a counterintelligence nature or of an international intelligence nature can change on a dime. And it's very hard to say with the Syria subject because so many, if you want to get esoteric for a minute, so many timelines are at play here too. And there is a negative infiltration I'm getting of an esoteric bent as well. And I think part of the reason I'm so happy to speak with you this evening as well, if I might segue this a bit into the larger picture of things, is the esoteric agenda at play here with international affairs. And to not underestimate the role of things like high titter factor subjects that most people who are uninitiated to this information will laugh about, but that Satanism and the role of the occult plays a big role on the international stage right now. And whether or not, in fact, there's even advanced ET technology or technology of a fringe factor, shall we say, is being used to infiltrate and propagate certain agendas as well. And through various vehicles like mind control, witchcraft, and the like. And, you know, I'm an esotericist. I'm a psychic medium by practice. That's what I do for a living. So you aren't asking me to be on a show or hiring me to talk about political agendas from a more 3D reality viewpoint. And what I see happening astrologically as well is interesting, just if I might point on that for a moment, I am not an astrologer, but I've been reading what other astrologers are saying about this week, and it's interesting that the high point of the revolution in Tahrir Square exactly concurred with, I believe it's something like Saturn being retrograde, which when it's conjunct with, I think it's Pluto or a number of other factors, almost always points to revolution and positive action. It's when Saturn turns direct that things become hidden, because Saturn is the planet of hidden agendas in the esoteric and in the crypto-astrological end of things, or the esoteric end of things. And there are some in the esoteric realm who work for the, lack of a better term, dark side, who have even impressed the importance of the planet Saturn on the esoteric to the point of creating a cult, otherwise known as the cult of Saturn, and is effectively, if not literally, a de facto version of Satanism that works its way through the esoteric agenda into mind control and public policy in that regard. And I know I've gotten a lot of flack publicly lately for talking about having the audacity to mention that heads of state and political leaders and influencers of thought and policy, not only in the UFO community and the conspiracy community and the esoteric world, but other communities as well, have been affected greatly by the impact of the esoteric on their lives, whether they realize it or not. And that mind control, for instance, the most common one that comes to mind that I immediately think of is the monarch mind control in the entertainment industrial complex, also primarily in Hollywood and the music industry. That gets talked a lot more frequently on sites like Vigilant Citizen, who's doing a great public service talking about the impact of the Masonic above the capstone, 33rd degree and above, basically black witchcraft and secret school knowledge of mind control that goes on to facilitate propagandistic and intelligence-based agendas. And that a lot of Hollywood actors and performers and musicians who know how to take direction very easily and very well are more probably susceptible to these influences than others, precisely because of the very thing that they're good at, which is they take direction well, which means that they are also most likely placed under more of an easily, highly suggestible state. You add to that things like trauma-based mind control programming, which involves horrific abuse of all kinds, both mental, physical, and otherwise. And you have yourself the perfect soup recipe, the perfect stew stock, if you will, for creating sleeper agents, for creating people who will carry out your agenda further, whether consciously or un. Because what are you doing? You're influencing policy through mind control. And you have this wonderful confluence of what's going on in Egypt right now about the will of the people and the army signing with the will of the people and making this reality of what I believe firmly for the first time perhaps ever in Egypt's history will be a constitutional democracy that's really worth something and isn't just a blueprint for oligarchical control. It's not just semantics. It's not just labels and names. Empty labels and names, rather, but it's actually becoming something real and tangible as a participatory democracy, which is what, you know, I think free speech definitely has to play a role in that, and civil rights have to play a role in that. We like to think, the more libertarian of my friends like to think that laws by themselves, and I don't consider myself any political affiliation anymore at all because I've been disillusioned by all parties, including the libertarian assessment sometimes. I don't agree with everything that they have to say, for instance, about gay marriage or certain people in the media are saying, and they claim to have libertarian associations. But I don't believe that's real libertarianism to be against civil liberties. That is actually the opposite of civil liberties. I'm all for people being able to rule themselves. But unfortunately, we live in a world where there are some people who think that members of the same sex should not be allowed to love one another and have the legal same legal protections that members of the opposite sex can have and enjoy. So that's a problem with me. I think if we're going to be evolved, it needs to be fully participatory, and there needs to be an abolition of hierarchies and hierarchical structures, and there needs to be, I'm not a communist, but there needs to be a more unilateral structure in place where certainly there can be experts and specialists who bring more information to the table, but no one's voice should be considered more important than another. And this also goes hand in hand with the breakdown of a dualistic party system like in America, which we currently don't enjoy a lot of variety in our political formats or a lot of room for a voice. And that is also tightly controlled. That's less esoteric, believe it or not. There's real hardened nuts and bolts information to show that our balloting system is highly corrupt and easily corrupted by very real world 3D means of hacking and computer technology that can interfere with these systems of democracy, supposed democracy. So if we're talking about freedom of speech, we're also talking about civil liberties as well, because freedom of expression falls under the First Amendment as well. And if we're talking further about that, we can also co-join that with the Fourth Amendment and the right to privacy and the right to not have unlawful search and seizure in any way, shape, or form on your person or your home. And this, too, is up for debate right now. I'm a little concerned about the way that's going, because what happens when you have all these wonderful confluences of rebellion happening that are in the air, that are showing now, there's a high chance of retaliation from the powers that be as well. So you have, for every one of your Edward Snowdens or your Bradley Mannings, you'll have 10 other people suddenly taken into court for questioning over ridiculous things. I've noticed an unusually heightened volume, for instance, and this is just a thoroughly unscientific observation I'm making, but I've noticed a high volume lately of people being threatened with long-term jail terms for frivolous that would gum up the works of the law, and what I would consider frivolous charges that are baseless, but nonetheless are being carried out by local municipalities. Case in point, there was a man who was an activist who'd been writing anti-big bank slogans in chalk, totally washable, soluble chalk, on the sidewalks outside of a Bank of America, and I think it was, I'm not sure which city, I think it might have been San Diego or a city in California perhaps, I could be wrong. Thankfully, the good sense of the law enforcement threw the case out, but the fact that the local municipality was willing to be kowtowed by the Bank of America because they didn't like what this man was saying about them, even though he was exercising his free right to say, consider going to a credit union instead of a big bank, and this is all he was writing a website in chalk on the ground about abandoning being a member of a large financial institution and instead moving your funds to a smaller, more credible, more accountable cooperative credit union as a form of social protest against what these banks are doing. And surprise, surprise, many of these international incidents that do have an esoteric sort of ring about them. There is an astrological bent to this as well, and make no mistake, the cabal members in power who publicly have one face and privately are another absolutely rely on astrology. They absolutely rely on occultism. They absolutely rely on their psychics and their mediums and people to tell them about portents and things to look out for. And then in addition, they have even more fringe technology that's reverse-engineered extraterrestrial tech. And yes, I just went there and I said that at the very, very tippy-top echelons of power that nobody gets access to except for maybe a few hundred people or maybe a few thousand, if that, on the planet. And that's being kept and that's being suppressed, and that also goes into the free energy end of things, which we could talk about if you like, but ultimately, when people underestimate the role of occultism and the esoteric on deal-making with heads of state, and when people don't even acknowledge that things like mind control occur and hypnosis are being used on members of heads of power, members of state and heads of power in all industry, and I'd like to talk about that for a minute, my direct personal information that I've received through second-party information and direct first-person experience that I've experienced with people in unique positions of power. This stuff really goes on, and sticking your head in the sand and saying that the stuff isn't real is harming you, the person who's listening to this broadcast. It harms you the most. It doesn't even, ironically enough, hurt these people in the end because they're still getting paid. They're still getting wealthy. They might be psychically hurt, these victims, who don't even know in some cases it's happening to them. But I'd like to mention an incident, and I hope I'm not betraying any confidences here, but I have never spoken to this person directly, but I know one of their best friends. And I know of someone who attended the Bilderberg conference who was mind-controlled and was used as a pawn to try and get information out of him, and, attempts were made, I believe unsuccessfully, at tampering with him, however temporarily. And this person attended the Bilderberg conference, and he mentioned that he couldn't quite understand what was being said. The way people spoke was strange, and the phrasing was strange. It was the English language that was being spoken, and he understood what the words were, but he had complained that there was a strange cadence and a strange way in which the words were said, which to me is a big tip off. That's neuro-linguistic programming. And he told my friend this, and then she found him 2 days later standing in the patio of one of his homes, slack-jawed, and she had to shake him awake, and she felt that there was some kind of interference going on. And eventually he was all right, but this was 2 days after he politely refused to return. He didn't understand what all the big deal was about, all the hubbub, and he wanted to see for himself, and it just ultimately didn't have any draw for him. And so I guess in a good way that means that he was not susceptible to any mind control programming ultimately or any kind of long-term damage or effect. I pray and I hope that's the case. And I think that might be. This person's brilliant. Obviously, they're very wealthy and they're very up there in the upper echelon, so they didn't get there by being stupid or just getting there by resting on their laurels. So, like I said, I don't know this person directly, but I know them through people, and I have spoken to his wife on a couple of occasions, and so I am in that kind of circle, that kind of social circle. And it's not to brag. I'm not happy about the fact that this person attended the Bilderberg meeting. But it was telling what I heard about this. It was very telling because the person who told me was extremely troubled when she relayed this information to me. And this is not a worrywart who was telling me this. This is one of the most happy-go-lucky, genuinely happy people I've met in my life who is able to cope. She has strong coping mechanisms about when life hands you lemons, you make lemonade. And she's, you know, she's a good person. So that was troubling because it confirmed some suspicions that I'd had and also things that I had picked up about Bilderberg conferences. And again, that's an exclusive with you, Jamil. I've never mentioned that publicly. Mm-hmm. So do with that what you will. But more and more and more, what I see is this veil being exposed and lifted, and we go through periods of time where we can potentially, as the public, the masses, could experience vulnerabilities in, say, public events like the marathon bombing in April, which I accurately predicted in January in my Basis 21 part 4 of my interview. We have these things happening, and they are orchestrated. That was a false flag operation. They used FBI patsies to do the deed. They were not completely informed of what was going on, and they were made to be the fall guy for something that was absolutely a staged operation and funded by the, I'm getting, the military-industrial complex at least, but intelligence agencies were very aware of this event. And what happens is there seems to be a surge in power, as it were, metaphorically, and who knows, maybe literally at points, I don't know, when people sort of reach a tipping point, and it's understood, for instance, when people speak publicly about false flag operations, for instance, it seems to be something that will cause destinations to change, or previously thought operations that were going to go down, sometimes they change at the last minute. So what I'm getting energetically as a psychic is the more people become aware of it, that's a good thing, but the double-edged sword of it is that it can be problematic the more people become aware, at least in the short term, in terms of personal physical danger to people. Because when you think of who these people are, what are they essentially? They're cowards, the people that are enacting these things for their own political agendas, right? And they might even, I don't even believe that they believe in any kind of ideology. I think at heart they're cynics and they're just following orders because they believe in top dog, underdog. But I think at heart the orchestrators of these things are really cynical sociopaths who don't, they're nihilists. They don't have any belief systems other than acquisitiveness and power and control. So when you're dealing with people like that, when they're exposed, the only reaction they're going to have is just like when you corner a wounded animal. What happens when you approach a wounded, cornered animal? They attack, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be vigilant and we have to stay alert to these machinations because they are chess players. They love game boards. They love strategy. They love their arrogance in thinking that they are 1 or 12 steps ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And what the reality is that they're not, that people are becoming very rapidly, I might add, almost exhilaratingly so. But it's also kind of scary for me because I feel like when you become aware of these things, you expose yourself to that power and then you expose yourself to that influence and then they find out who you are and they can attack you in turn. So I would recommend caution for anyone who decides to speak out personally. I feel like the benefits are to be had, but that you have to know what you're getting into once you do that. So I tell these stories, and some might think that I'm violating confidentialities when I say some of these stories, but I say them because I know these people are at above levels that they think they're untouchable and they think they're technocrats who are billionaires who can't be touched. And yes, even they, in their hubris, can be tampered with, at least superficially. Now, that sounds like, well, they only got to them superficially. Well, you don't know. It's like if you dump toxic waste in a pond and it's supposedly cleaned up after being a, you know, a super toxic, I don't know what the EPA calls it. They call them
Superfund sites.
Superfund sites. It's not going to help that area's reputation for years afterwards. It's not going to help the property values of Superfund sites 20 years after it's supposedly quote-unquote clean. And oftentimes there are incidents when Superfund sites where they say that are clean, there's often negative repercussions to the ecosystem for years afterwards anyway. And some of these places are sort of like scorched earth policy kind of zones. And yes, I wish to make that metaphor about the comparison to a Superfund site and somebody who's been tampered with mind control.
Mm.
There's a lot of pernicious layers going on here. And we can talk about that if you like. I've certainly gone on long enough. If you want to guide the conversation in whatever direction you'd like to go further, Jamil, I'm happy to do that.
Well, this is great. Thank you so much for all of that. The place where you just brought us to, the double-edged sword of the times that we're in, when we're finding our voice, we're finding our balance, we're being shocked awake by some of the realities that are coming into play, and the exhilaration of, yes, finally, you know, we see something, that quote of Morpheus in the Matrix, you know, that splinter in the eye, we're finally locating it, you know, and boy, do we want to get that bloody thing out of our eye. I mean, it's been the splinter in the human's eye for eons, right?
Yeah.
We want to get rid of this splinter. We want to get rid of all the levels of mind control. And we want to have our sovereign reality untampered with and go on about our business as a human family that has its own things to work out, its own things to grow, its own ways to sort, its own ways to be. And so we really want to have this. And at the same time, it is almost like the powers that used to be, as your example, your analogy was great, you know, the wounded animal means the wounded animal is going down.
Yeah.
The powers that used to be are they used to be, and they are losing power. And I agree on some levels with what you're saying, and I would add that many of these plans, I believe we started there with the idea that what happened in Egypt wasn't in the plan. So that upset the agendas of the powers that used to be, which every time they get a blow to their sort of quasi-master plan, they're caught in a spin. They're that wounded animal. They're going down. They don't know what to do. And I also believe that the changes in the planet itself, the literal increase in the electromagnetic energy, the light, is changing the frequencies that the cabal, that the dark occult, the satanic practices have been fueled from. Mm-hmm. I believe that the energies that they have pulled from the literal environment of the Earth itself, it themselves are waning. They are just losing on all sides. And yes, they're ready. But I would add to that the other part of the double-edged sword, yes, they'll be ready with their paid grievances. Two things. One, these legal systems, these laws, these courts, all this stuff was set up by the satanic, ritual, occult-based energies guiding the human in its mind-controlled idea. It was setting up the right way, setting up the system of order, setting up a system of justice. And America really thinks it's the system of justice ad nauseum. It really thinks that this is a free place. But it was those same energies that set up these court systems. So we have a lot to do. We have a lot to sort through as a human species, because it's coming at us on all sides, not unlike it's coming out the wounded animals, the powers that used to be, because we don't even really have a sense of who we are. And then the other part of that double-edged sword isn't just that the corruption in the systems that we think are supposed to be just, is the fact that human beings, us, right, the we, the yeah, many here in this, as we're awakening, we're not all excited about that. As you know, right? You say something that upsets people, that, you know, pushes their illusion a little too far to the left. They don't want to look at it like that. They lash out at you. And that, you know, then you're the enemy. You're the demon. You're the bad one.
I know that all too well, unfortunately. That's sort of shooting the messenger reaction that people have. And they tend to react like their own wounded animal when I'm the bearer of bad news and I have to tell it like it is. And they don't like that. They want their illusion. Even people who consider themselves very clear-eyed, a lot of times, and this especially happens, I've found, with people of a more atheistic bent, or conversely, people of a fundamentalist bent, who have a very set, programmed, if I may, sort of blinders-on idea about reality, and they're not very flexible with that. Mm-hmm. It is inflexible with them. It is invariant. So it's hard for someone like me, who looks at things 10 different ways to Sunday and says, well, it could be this and it could be this. I'm just throwing it up against the wall to see what sticks. I don't know. But when I see a pattern happening, as I have, dozens and dozens of times, having to do with mind control, of what I know as a sixth sense practitioner, but also of what I know as a first, second, third, fourth, and fifth sense practitioner, and in addition to using my intellect, And in addition to research and corroboration of these things, and in addition to corroborative stories that I've heard from many, many, many people who come to me and tell me about their stories that I know to be true and factual and not elaborated on at all, there is a pattern that goes largely ignored by the general consensus, and it is of this reality of which I'm talking about. It's the veil. It has to do with the separation between two worlds and the evolution of the species in becoming aware of the awareness that we've been taken for a ride for centuries.
Absolutely. And let's do, I call the term I use is multidimensional when we're looking at all of our world reality and our inner being. I believe we're all having a multidimensional experience. And I wonder if we could use this as a segue in the conversation of recognizing patterns. In the Boston Marathon, that was a military drill, and it was very well publicized in the beginning of the media reports that came out. It was a military drill. We had approximately 15,000 military special ops and mercenary groups here in Boston for this military drill that was well documented. And so then two young men, the brothers from Chechnya, and I'm not saying their name because I don't know how to pronounce it, Tsarnaev, pardon me, but we all know who they are. Those two young men were the linchpins, were the patsies. And then we have the current experience of Edward Snowden. And Edward Snowden being the whistleblower, quote, of the PRISM program, the surveillance program that is being operated by Booz Allen Hamilton for the U.S. government to spy on all members of the entire globe who use internet or telephone. And he, to me, and the other two Chechenian brothers, one who I believe was tortured to death here in Boston, and then the younger one, who's now just taking all the hit, while everybody, you know, just whatever, never mind, don't want to go down that road. But anyway, so we have three young men. And this is a pattern that I'm noticing. We have three young men who apparently have upset the program on some level, or not. They've been set up to upset the program. Mm-hmm. And Edward Snowden is our recent one. He comes out, but he's working for an industry, the company that you know quite a lot about, Booz Allen Hamilton, who is well professed when you do any alternative research, any independent research, their mind control programs are top of their list. You don't have to do a whole lot of research to find out their interest in mind control. So the more I research them and their connections to the biggest money on the planet, their connections to the U.S. military, how in the world could they possibly not have known that they had a whistleblower brewing? And right?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And they're working on surveillance technology. That's what they're known for. And I certainly can agree. I noticed that Naomi Wolf had mentioned in an article, and I deeply respect this woman. She's always been thorough and asked the hard questions, and for that I consider her a true patriot, and is willing to risk unpopularity in order to say the right thing and do the right thing. Her suggestion, it was simply she was just posing a question that he's not completely off the hook yet and that this might be an orchestrated, controlled opposition move to make it look like he's actually rebelling from within, when in fact he could be a product of an intelligence operation. Because my reaction when he came out with this information was, my direct first thought was, this is news that the NSA is spying on each and every single American. I mean, I've personally experienced harassment and invasions of my privacy and my Fourth Amendment rights numerous times in my home. I've had people come into my home while I was asleep, and they woke me up and told me they were from Naval Intelligence. And this is not a hallucination. They took garments of clothing and altered them in an attempt to create a COINTELPRO operation to make me think I'm going crazy. It's a form of gaslighting. And God knows what else they did. They knocked me out with something. It was some kind of electronic device or some kind of electromagnetic weapon or psychotronic weapon, or maybe it's a chip implant that I have that's remote controlled through, via satellite or something else. But I was awake, and they told me who they were, and they were rifling through my things in my bedroom, and it was like a scene in a movie. It was insane, but it was real. It was absolutely real. I could hear the floorboards creaking, and they were carrying Maglite flashlights. They told me who they were very arrogantly, and then the next thing I know, boom, I'm out like a light. This has happened to me. This is not up for debate, because the garments themselves were altered deliberately to show me they'd been there. So when I hear something like Booz Allen, a company like Booz Allen Hamilton having an employee who's a defector, who's only worked there for 3 months, I might add, and perhaps that was his strategy, to go into private industry before he felt comfortable enough to create his own getaway scenario. I have no idea. But it seems odd to me that someone as brilliant as he would be dating someone as ditzy as the girlfriend who posted on her blog. I'm sorry, I hate to be a judge about this, but maybe not. She's into pole dancing and was weeping the love of her life in a really corny poem. I'm sorry to sound mean, but she just didn't sound like she matched the intellect of this man who seems very cool and measured and has a voice that could sell you arsenic. I mean, his voice is very persuasive, and you do have to consider the even measured tones by which he spoke, and he constantly was reiterating how much he had lost personally. It seems odd to me that he would be dating such an overtly, stereotypically, quote-unquote, sexy girl who is a pole dancer and I guess a dancer. And I don't mean to cast aspersions. If he's the real deal, God bless him. Mm-hmm. But I would recommend for everyone listening to read Naomi Wolf's concerns. I think she wrote about this in the Huffington Post. I'm sorry, I can't quote the site exactly where she posted this, but just type in Edward Snowden and Naomi Wolf in any search engine. I'm sure you'll find her complaint or her concern.
It's on Global Research. That's where I found it. It's on my blog as well.
Fantastic. So I think she brings up some salient, relevant points that need to be paid attention to because he's not out of the water yet. I still hold my suspicions with people like Julian Assange, who grew up in a cult. I mean, if we really want to talk about all of these whistleblowers who come from mind control, it's kind of interesting. I mean, he comes from this very bizarre cult that his mother was a part of that has ties to Helena Blavatsky and the Theosophists, which were heavily influencing the Nazis and eugenics programs and things like that, and believers in the esoteric were, Blavatsky's right up there with Aleister Crowley in terms of the high-level practitioners of the occult. And I've gone to theosophy meetings in New York City, and I didn't like them. I felt that they were just more of the same old dogma and power and control issues, and not to mention that the basement library that me and my companion went to to visit that had esoteric books that you could check out had the most negative energy I've ever experienced in any library that I've ever been to. And there was a weird energetic coming off of the building itself. And I got psychically attacked by a woman who was sitting in the audience, the congregation at one of these meetings. And she kept drawing me in and trying to attack, and definitely attacking me while this was happening. So my experiences with theosophists have been quite negative. And I don't know why other people don't consciously become aware that they're being psychically attacked. Perhaps because I'm so out there about it and so public about it that I perhaps make myself a target more for this sort of thing. But I find it impossible to believe at this point that people wouldn't become aware that someone can mess with them energetically in the 21st century. It's 2013 now. There are many cultures that work with energy fields and bioenergy. And Blavatsky was one of the people who talked about the life force. I believe she's one of the people who propagated the Vril technology and the idea of the life force of the Vril, which was the Nazi component that the Pula Society in Germany propagated, and that many high-level SS officers were sympathetic to and participated in, and used members of the Pula Society to do channeling and supposedly created a Nazi UFO based on the specifications that they gave them, and it might be connected to the Nazi bell and all that kind of stuff, but that's a whole other subject altogether. I just find it impossible to believe that people can be so willfully ignorant of the fact that, yes, people can psychically mess with your body-mind-spirit connection in this day and age, but call me crazy, I deal with this kind of thing every day, this issue at least. That's my bread and butter in trade. I get emails from people all over the world who know about what I'm talking about, asking for help and assistance. And it's just amazing to me that anyone could be so asleep and unaware of this at this time, but I guess it still happens. But this is the pernicious, sort of omnipresent theme that keeps showing up. You have these highly successful people who often are connected to deep esoteric agendas and, surprise, surprise, mind control experimentation or an interest in it. And have involvement with it.
Let's go there and start a little bit backing up with a definition of a satanic occult organization. Can you give us a really bare bones context of what is a satanic occult organization, if that's possible, a context where we can put our mind in to begin the exploration, because with what we don't know yet, we have to learn, right?
Oh, thank you for that. Yes, I'm happy to provide an explanation, if I may. This is my unique personal interpretation of this, but I think most people who are not involved with these organizations, who are unbiased, will tend to agree. I think the first basis or precept of anything satanic is an overwhelming service to self mentality. And by that I mean a kind of selfishness which harms everyone around you or winds up being more harmful than not, rather than the kind of selfishness that is necessary and needed to provide for what you need to cover your bases so that you can be as well-rounded an individual as possible and give the most you can to others in the spirit of goodwill and benevolence. Service to self organizations or sensibilities like the Church of Satan don't want to have anything to do with selflessness. They are of the belief system, and they will tell you straight up, they'll tell you from the beginning, that you are, they tend to come from a much more atheistic standpoint, which is ironic. The Church of Satan in particular is basically a de facto version of a very hedonistic form of atheism, and that there's no judgments, there's no such thing as right and wrong. You just do to thine own self be true, but in a really malicious, malignant way, in that there's nothing wrong, that you just do what you need to do and don't think about the consequences. And don't apologize for it, no matter who you run over or hurt in the process. If that person was too, quote-unquote, dumb to survive, then serves them right. They believe in survival of the fittest. It's kind of an Aryan sensibility or a Spartan sensibility. And if you read the Satanic Bible, and I have, it's a very user-friendly. I found, you know, it's very easy to find the Satanic Bible agreeable, actually. I would say about 80% of the Satanic Bible comes across more like a self-help book than anything else, or a almost like a self-sufficiency book about what needs to be done in order to relate to the world in a more efficient, personally beneficial manner. But, and there's a lot of humor in it. Anton LaVey, who wrote the book, was a very clever guy, you know. Nobody would say that he wasn't charming. But ultimately, then it veers into these rituals at the back that you're supposed to do that he calls psychodramas. And really what it is just putting yourself in a trance of self-belief systems that he took from Aleister Crowley. These were loosely based rituals on Aleister Crowley's workings. And by that, satanic workings are nothing more than psychodramas that you create that involve full intentions. And intention counts for a lot, because when I was waking up, one of the first things I was told by my guides is thoughts create reality. So when all of these atheists who don't follow the satanic precept and don't believe in anything esoteric want to call me full of bunk and a liar and crazy, what they're not taking into effect is the power of the mind and how real it is and how you can drive intention through these types of things. But before I make it sound like it's this really great thing, I'm not trying to inadvertently make it sound like workings and rituals are a really great thing, but that they can be highly effective. But one of the other factors of a satanic belief system, and I would include left brain rules logic over right brain always, or one hemisphere trumps the other always. That can go the flip side with a cult. If you find yourself in a cult, they will tell you not to critically think at all. If you find yourself in some kind of atheistic sort of mindset that sort of revolves around the only God that you should be is you, and you should consider yourself a God, that's another precept of Satanism, is that you are the creation, you are the ultimate creator, there's no one else other than yourself. Now, the Church of Satan, which is not straight-up Crowleyite Satanism, is really more about self-promotion and materialism and an atheistic bent, and a hatred of Christianity in particular, but organized religion in general, in such a way that it becomes more of a, almost like a socio-political statement. That's the way that LaVey framed it, that you should just be a hedonist and do what you like and do as thou wilt, which is actually a Crowleyite thing. But he is taking some of his cues from Crowley, but really there is a more malignant, that's the PR, the sort of smooth-talking PR release form that was LaVey. But really, at its heart, what real Satanism is about is really more in the vein of what Crowley was doing and who people like Richard Ramirez, the serial killer, were following, which is, it involves satanic ritual, it involves sacrifice, sometimes human, blood drinking, and the like. And that's real. And that was promulgated a lot through secret school knowledge of people like Blavatsky. The Blavatsky end of things was channeling spirits and opening portals and speaking to interdimensional entities, which Crowley was a big fanboy of. And he talked frequently about creatures like interdimensional beings that he would summon through these workings. And in fact, this is what happens when someone doesn't fully understand the power of the mind. There's ancient technology that we have inside of us that the ancients taught to certain precepts, certain initiates, who later became the basis of the secret schools of knowledge and the Gnostics. Some were good, for lack of a better term, and some were bad, for lack of a better term. I believe that these entities and these intelligences, in some cases, were ETs, if not flat out all the time. And some of these ET races were involved with mind control. That was their main interest. Among others are certain gray ET races and reptilians, but that they have these capabilities of going between worlds and seeming as phantoms or as shadow figures or as see-through creatures that some would call ghosts or apparitions. And they would be dictating information to the ancients, and there's many different places where this happened, in Atlantis, in the lost island of Atlantis, which later became a victim of its own arrogance and thus had to drown by its own hubris because the technology had advanced far beyond the spirituality, and they had become much like an acquisitive, atheistic, warlike group of people. And so that was the karma for that. So you have ancient societies like Atlantis like that ending abruptly, but you also have ancient societies like the Egyptians who gain some of their knowledge through these secret schools of knowledge. And there's a lot of occultism to this day that remains in Egyptian history. And you can see it in the form of hieroglyphs and how the priests and the priest class would conduct things and their viewpoints. This was told to them by the stars. You look at the pyramids, and there's something called the astrological procession, or astronomical procession, rather, that Graham Hancock has talked about this a lot. That's too much to go into here, but they're absolutely aligned. If you looked at the precision by which these pyramids were built and what the alignments would have been when they were built, they go directly to the Orion constellation, which, interestingly enough, is where certain Zeta Reticulan negative ETs are supposedly from, and reptilians, so who were all interested in mind control. And that's a big part of the Egyptian sort of death rituals and the binding rituals with mummification and so forth. Again, it's too much to go into here, but we can go into ancient Sumer. I mean, there's countless cultures that have been passed down with this information through various, I'm going to say, for lack of a better term, ET groups or interdimensional groups. And Crowley was just culling who I consider the first modern Satanist who popularized a lot of these secret schools of knowledge for his own gain and benefit. But the problem is that you fail to recognize when you get involved in these service to self organizations like OTO, which was another one that he, I think, helped form and then later was even kicked out of his own self-formed group. And that group is also, OTO stands for Ordo Templis, I always get the last word wrong, Ordonai, something like that. Oriental. I'm getting the last word wrong. I'm sorry. I'm sounding very ignorant right now, but OTO, look it up. Again, cloaked in this idea of being an enlightened group of people who wish to just practice occultism to study secret schools of knowledge, and they make no secret about that. And through that, they become, they think, gods. And of course, the Knights Templar, who have lots of ties to Satanism, take a lot of these secret school knowledge. You have certain Vatican-related groups like the Jesuits and what is it? Not the Jesuits, I'm sorry. The Knights of Malta, mm-hmm. who are involved with lots of secret rituals connected to the Masons. Well, the Masons also were studying secret schools of knowledge that involve initiation. If you go online, you can see this on YouTube. If you go, you can just type in Masonic initiation rites or first level to third level Masonic rites, or what's the other one that's a good catchphrase or search engine word? Third degree master Mason initiation rites. Some public service was done when a man decided to break from being a high-level degree Mason, and he decided to recreate these secret rituals online. And you see, under threat of death, literal death, if you reveal these secret rituals, do these initiates go through this program? And that's nothing new. That's ancient. And this all stems from secret schools of knowledge that have been warped. They may have been taught initially to show people what not to do, but somehow that got twisted. You can thank sociopathy and mental illness for that, or just an unyielding need for power and control. But someone somewhere along the line got a hold of this negative information and used it against the human populace to control agenda and to direct and confuse things, so that everyone is just backbiting and attacking the people that could be their very allies instead of coming together in unity, which is what they don't want. They want to control the game board. So you can call it Masonic, you can call it Knights Templar, you can call it OTO, you can call it Theosophy. All of these things fall under that umbrella of service to self organizations that are acquisitive over power and control and proprietary information that is kept from the rest of society, or because of their own machinations, ridiculed by much of society as harmless. There's no such thing as psychic attacks, et cetera, et cetera. Mind control is fictitious. So are you going to say that hypnosis is fictitious? Because it's not. And where does hypnosis come from? It comes from behavioral psychologists, and it also comes from secret schools of knowledge. Because these people in these initiate programs, especially the Egyptians, also knew about someone had shown them what drugs to give people to put them in highly suggestive states as well. And this has been militarized. And they use this in mind control programs like my labs that I've been a part of. And I make no bones about it. There's a heavy occult factor to this, but there's also a heavy interest in private industry and the militarization and weaponization of the technologies that have been used against me as a human test subject. And so I know that there's mind control and service to self stuff going on. When I speak to a person who is, you know, part of the Hong Kong head of ICAR, and he's telling me that he talks about my labs in China, where he's based, in Chinese documentaries, but he doesn't bother to talk about it in English because he doesn't want to disturb the disclosure movement. And really what that says to me is that he's either being evasive, he admits he's a MyLab, his doctoral thesis was based on MyLabs, but he's safely ensconced in Hong Kong or wherever it is, and he dare not produce this information for English language audiences, especially in the United States of America. And for that, I think that he's created a certain kind of betrayal for people like myself and for himself. He's betraying himself by refusing to broach the subject. And many researchers behind the scenes will not talk about it or touch it with a 10-foot pole. And I think that's mind control at work. I see that as layered programming. And people say this doesn't exist, and I'm just being, you know, biased. No, I've seen it. I have the email back and forth with this man, and it's highly illogical. It makes no sense. And I've had problems with ICAR before. It's not to make it about a specific organization, but even the head of ICAR International admits he's been a MyLab, and he's harassed me horribly and says that my information's wrong, and based on his research, I'm wrong. He's trying to gaslight me and tell me that my experience is not what I'm experiencing. And yet he provides no further evidence or information to back that up. And he's been evasive, and he talks out both sides of his mouth, which is another sign of heavy mind control. Do as I say, not as I do.
Will you please tell us what is a MyLab? And if you feel comfortable, to what degree you feel comfortable, share with us what those programs are and what your participation has been. And I understand that it's been a process of awakening and recovering memories. I understand that you were enrolled in programs from childhood, that the MyLab looked like it was the cherry on the top that broke your consciousness and you said enough. That's my interpretation. Correct me, please. But I wonder if you could offer to the listeners a little more information about what is a MyLab. Now, this is a very new term for the Commonwealth in America, who thinks that, you know, it's really okay for everything that the military does is okay. You know, there's this really, you know, this worshiping of military might, because that means that the bombs don't drop here. But they don't realize the bombs are on their television set programming their minds, you know,
right,
every day. So they sit well and drink their beer, and they, you know, allow their sedentary imprisonment to keep them from thinking about anything relevant, like what their military that they're paying for with their tax dollars is accomplishing around the world, and one of which is torturing people like you and many people, many children, especially from big families. And then they have my intuitive assessment. They work the big families for intelligence, because you are obviously an extraordinarily intelligent person. And then they work the orphanages for their gophers, for their human sacrifices, for their crap work that are very disposable. But the intelligent ones, they seem to pull from the bigger families, from the systemic, the long-time military connections. They breed you guys, you know. You have something they want on more levels than I even understand. And then you get to grow up and be a MyLab without your consent, right. You know? And so what is a MyLab?
Well, thank you, Jamil. This is a good segue into why I would be talking about that in the first place and how that connects to the esoteric agenda. It supports a very important role in that regard. It's funny that we mention Booz Allen Hamilton, because when you're talking about some of these people who are MyLabs, sometimes it's because they're targeted individuals because of a personal or a familial vendetta. And I personally believe, because my family does not come from a satanic ritual practicing family, but I do believe that because of two unique positions of power that both of my grandfathers experienced, one who was an international lawyer for the World Court and who taught at The Hague and who was one of the architects, as we know it, of international law. He wrote a textbook called The Law of Nations, which is now used, I believe, up until the late 20th century, at the very least, until his death in 1990, my grandfather, Herbert W. Briggs, was instrumental in pissing off a lot of people in the dark cabal, quite frankly. And that would put my head on a platter, most definitely. I've heard many instances from people who are targeted individuals in my labs where something came of this because of something said. Even just a passing comment can be enough to set these people off and ruin your life if they want to. Because they're sociopaths and they're crazy. And interestingly enough, my connection to Booz Allen Hamilton comes from a comment, several comments that my grandfather said when he was alive about U.S. foreign policy and how we're basically utilizing certain countries to exploit and damage the situation and the people of these countries to, in the guise of continuing U.S. policy abroad. And R. James Woolsey, who is a neocon and a globalist and a member of the New World Order and a former CIA director, wrote unfavorably about my grandfather in a very New World Order phrase report, and I'm drawing a blank now as to the name of this report, but I've mentioned it before in other interviews. And he brought this up disparagingly and made my grandfather seem like he didn't know about foreign policy at all, and he just didn't know what he was talking about. And Woolsey and people like Dick Cheney were making the world safe for democracy, according to Woolsey. And he just happened. So flash forward, that's him criticizing my grandfather posthumously in a report that he wrote in the 90s about the future of the U.S. influence and the state of law and order in internationally. That was the basis for the report. And you can find that online at my blog, anyaisachannel.blogspot.com. The name of that particular blog post where you can read the entire, where you can read the report in its entirety, is called More Wild and Woolsey Trips Down the New World Order Rabbit Hole, and there's more details on that on my blog. But the fact remains that in addition to being fiercely interested in UFOs and UFOs reverse-engineered technology, and he's made no bones about that publicly, say what you will about his relationship to Stephen Greer, that's up for debate, but it is known that he has a public interest, a very vested interest in profiting off of UFOs and UFO reverse engineered tech. And then you add to that that he also became, surprise, surprise, one of the vice presidents for Booz Allen Hamilton, none other. So Booz Allen Hamilton, if you don't already know, are almost exclusively involved with surveillance culture, surveillance technology, research and development on surveillance, and very publicly, I might add, and spending a lot of money on this, surface-to-brain interface technology, which is basically synthetic telepathy. That's what it's called. And this is real. This exists. And if they wanted to have a vendetta against someone, who better than someone he despised? Let's make no bones about it. He despised my grandfather. And who better to go after than members of their family, of the person you despise? If he's dead, you can't get him. To get his granddaughter. It's really easy. And I've already displayed psychic abilities my whole life. they know your psych profile, they know your medical records. I have quite some difficulty getting a hold of my medical records, and the nurse at the hospital where my medical records have been transferred to, because my general physician has since retired, will not return my calls. Mm. And suddenly my files are difficult to get a hold of. This is a recent development. Mm. But he can definitely get a hold of my medical files. Mm. And I'm sure that they saw a perfect storm brewing for psychic activity with me at a very early age. And I'm sure it wasn't just him that would be interested in my story. I've talked about this in other interviews as well. I would refer people to my bases 15 and 21 interviews for more details on that, just for the purposes of time. I can't really go into that, but there are people at Los Alamos National Laboratories who would be interested in what I'm doing. And you go into the history of rocketry and the history of science in those areas. Another reason they'd probably be interested in me, I haven't mentioned this as much in the interviews, but my grandfather Briggs was also very, very, very good friends, if not best friends, with Hans Bethe, one of the Manhattan Project scientists. And I did meet him when I was 6 years old at a cocktail party my grandparents had. So that might be another reason that the U.S. government's slightly interested in me. Mm. I don't know. They're interested in all of the family members and friends of these people, so that might be another reason. But I know that the NSA is deeply interested in me and invested in me for some reason, for surveillance and monitoring. I know that Naval Intelligence is deeply, deeply attached to my story, unfortunately. And it's safe to say that perhaps NORAD and Space Command are also deeply interested in my story for various and assorted other reasons that I've talked about in other interviews that I don't think I have time to go into here. But you can look into that further, how I've been repeatedly used as a human test subject for telepathic experimentation over the years. I've been told in no uncertain terms that I was used as a telepath liaison, a civilian telepath liaison, in case the quote-unquote power grid went down, I would be activated. I've been told all kinds of things, that I've been used for things. The public name for this is not the private name that they gave it, but the public name was for Project Moonbeam, and I was being used to quote-unquote psychically clean up quote-unquote the experiments they did with the Montauk Project and all of these other time travel experiments that are going on, that really do go on. There really are psychic time travel things going on. And actually, as an aside, I would actually say that what I do for a living is a form of time travel, because I'm looking at the past, present, and future all at once, and that time is non-local. And as I understand it, it's all happening at the same time. Now, if you corroborate what I'm saying about how I do what I do for a living, and then you listen to what people have said in above top secret programs about traversing wormholes and using, in the secret space program, as I understand it, hyperliminal technology, which means faster than the speed of light technology, it all involves folding time. And a lot of these technologies that they have assessed involve telepathic technology that's actually also something I've been a part of. In a, I know this sounds too incredible to be true, but it's true. In 1991, in 3D reality as a paid test subject, this was one of the few things I actually signed up for, I participated in a telekinesis experiment at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. Now, that actually later became patented technology and is being also utilized at the University of Minneapolis, or excuse me, the University of Minnesota, where they are now successfully telekinetically flying drones. Mm. So to say this, that any of my story doesn't have to do with you, Joe Q. Public, is in disingenuous. It does. It absolutely has to do with you, the public, because now it's telekinetic drones being flown over your home with potential capability to harm, to have artillery attachments placed on these things. Mm-hmm. And I was a part of that technology testing, research, and development. So this is all in the books. This is 3D what I'm talking about. This is very basic. They've been doing this since at least the 1970s. They got me in 91 to work on this, and I believe it was someone like Northrop Grumman who was involved with the development of that, and NASA may have been involved with the R&D for that test that I was a part of. But this all goes into look at who these people are, because you look at the history of NASA, you look at all these other organizations like Parsons Rocketry, and you look at the their spiritual leanings, for lack of a better term, and invariably a lot of them are all either members of OTO, occult influence. You have people like Michael Aquino, who is a colonel, I believe, in the Air Force or the Army, who has carte blanche on mind control research and development, who's been acquitted, or the case was thrown out of court, but there was a lot of more than circumstantial evidence leading to the fact that he was abusing children, sexually and otherwise, and involved in ritual abuse of children. And he has carte blanche with organizations involving mind control tech and the militarization of these kinds of things. You look at Jack Parsons, who participated in a Moonchild ritual with none other than L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, who is an unrepentant Satanist. He is a huge fanboy, or was rather, a huge fan. He's dead now, obviously, but was a huge fanboy of Aleister Crowley, and in fact, in one interview, called him my friend, even though he'd never personally met him. Of course, Hubbard was psychotic, but that's another thing altogether. He took very, very, very seriously the role of being an initiate. He was an OTO. He was a huge Crowleyite, and most of his work, including Dianetics, is based on inversion and creating inversions to mind control people. And if you look at the wording of this book, it's absolutely neuro-linguistic programs designed to hypnotize you into thinking that Dianetics and Scientology is the greatest thing ever. And it may look ridiculous on the surface to most of us who are reading it, but to a certain type of person who is predisposed to being highly suggestive or placed in a highly suggestive state based on neuro-linguistic programming, this will be very, very effective and will suck them in very quickly. And in fact, it has worked for certain segments of the population. And I don't think I need to go into the exposure of the cult of Scientology, but it's damaged untold lives. And there's plenty of evidence to show how much it's harmed people by its practices and the way it controls people. And that, too, comes from the influence of Hubbard's obsession with Crowley. And Parsons, of course, was burned by Hubbard later on, and you can hear all about this. Online there's an article that's been a lovely compendium that Cal Garrison put together based on some comments like this that I had made in my Alfred Weber interview that I did recently about the Church of Scientology and the connection to Satanism and how it is satanic. And on the Spirit of Ma'at website, which is owned by Dronvalo Melchizedek. And so she has kindly credited me as the author of this story, or rather the person who tells the story. But really, she's the person who did all the research, so I have to credit Cal Garrison. But I thank them very much for taking this subject seriously. It's an excellent article. If you just want to check that out further with the connections to Satanism in Scientology, you can go to part two, the satanic elements of Scientology, and that would be, you just search engine that term with my name, Anya Briggs, and or you can add Spirit of Ma'at, M-A-apostrophe-A-T magazine, and that's an online publication. It's free. You can see more of what I'm talking about in that article and what Cal is comprising as well. And there's an excellent documentary that also links ties to political figures with Satanism and ritual abuse and mind control at the bottom of the article that I highly, highly recommend. And one of the main offenders of that, and speaking more about the esoteric agenda, are Scientologists and people like L. Ron Hubbard and people like Hal Putoff, who's one of the founders and progenitors of the remote viewing program. He's a high-level Scientologist, as well as, I forget the name of the other gentleman, who was also in that First Earth Battalion group. And I've gotten into it with members of that group as well, and they've gaslighted me and treated me very badly when I confronted them about their occult leanings and how they're service to self and how they're not being intellectually or spiritually honest at all about their intentions and how they sell their services to the highest bidder without scruple, and they don't want to have anything to do with it. They just sort of don't even communicate. So these are facts. These are facts. These people don't even try to hide it. And when you talk about what is Satanism, it falls under an umbrella, but it certainly starts revealing itself as a pattern after a while. Real Satanism usually involves somebody who's malignantly narcissistic or a sociopathic in nature, who is interested in power and control and wants to dupe people in order to gain it if they have to. They don't, in fact, they take a sadistic pleasure in doing that. It's not even like they try to take the ethical route if it's easiest. It's almost like they get a thrill out of controlling people's minds primarily and then their bodies and souls next. But it begins with the mind. It begins with perception. So really, when you're looking at the term Satanism, you need to look at it from a broader perspective than just this or just that. It's a combination of factors in addition to people who just flat out say, I'm a Satanist, or I would identify as a Satanist.
How can we understand how satanic practices are influencing us, even if we don't pay any attention to them? There's a common belief in the myth of America that if we just ignore all the hard stuff going on, if we ignore some of the stories of the satanic practice of the so-called founding fathers, they're all well-documented Masons, the stories of the Pentagon being the inverted pentagram, the satanic a ritual, a connection to that in the DC, the obelisks all over the planet, very mm-hmm. satanic ritual item. And there's these ideas that, you know, if we ignore all these satanic ritual garb that we find in the places of power, of the power that's now waning, we can just act, we were untouched. It's like this idea that if we ignore it, it won't touch us, and if we ignore it long enough, it will just go away. And I beg to differ on that theory and feel that it is a service to make information like this available so that people who are feeling more curious at the very least or more robust spiritually to take on this can begin to unprogram their own mind and how they are themselves living out these very sort of satanic agendas, but on a much lower level. Like the materialist self-serving agenda is really quite a feat here in the materialist American experience. You know, the identification with all about me and the rugged individual and get mine, and, you know, screw you, yeah. you. This, I believe, is also a very satanic manifestation on a much lower level. And I feel like this is one of the reasons we have to take this study quite seriously and look at how these rituals are, in fact, infiltrating our reality. And I think that one of the places we can go to kind of go directly to some of the heads of that is Hollywood. You know,
oh, absolutely. But if I may backtrack a moment, I'd be happy to talk with you about that further. But I would love to add to that comment about the statement that the history of this country, the basis on the individual rather than the group, has been emphasized, and you positing that that could be a satanic reference. I am all for rugged individualism in the sense of self-mastery and in the sense of learning about oneself and your contributions to society and so forth and being able to provide for yourself for the greater good. But what they do is they will twist that mentality into something more materialistic, which is what it has been for the greater part of at least a couple of centuries and has been the ruse used and the mind control ruse to get us into wars of preemptive wars and wars of aggression around the globe to increase, quote-unquote, democracy around the planet, whatever that means. That's just another form of mind control. But also what I would like to mention is I didn't really fully give you a definition of my experience of being a MyLab. What that is called, it's a short form for military abductee. And I am not in the military. Let me make that perfectly clear. I'm a civilian. But they call them MyLabs because these events typically happen with militaristic intentions, and they are carried out like a military operation, whether or not they're under the aegis of the military proper. The people who took me, including, and he has publicly admitted this in a radio show that I was asked to be on with him, believe it or not, one of the people who abducted me in a MyLab was Aaron McCollum. And that was testimony that I gave on this interview that, interestingly enough, has disappeared not once but twice from the Internet. And I have tried to get a copy from Jerry Avalos, who runs another radio show, I believe on Blog Talk Radio, I'm not sure, Revolution Radio. There's a lot of people with agendas in his camp who don't like me, who have kind of made it their mission to make sure that this interview that I did with Aaron does not air ever again. And I wish them well and everything, but I'd be amiss if I said that there wasn't some skullduggery going on here with that particular interview that I consider a very historic, important document. I don't think there's many interviews with people who are speaking with their abductor about a military abduction on the air, on record. So I wish I could direct people to that. It's a May 2010 interview that I did on Project Information Generation Radio with Jeremiah Duncan. That has since been taken over by Dave Corso, who hates my guts, so that's not a surprise that this file would go missing time and time again. He's more than amply shown that he has agents working with him and people who will follow him to the ends of the earth who have hacked my emails, hacked into my computer remotely, and caused a lot of damage between me and Aaron. In our relationship, they've drawn wedges because, believe it or not, for a short period of time when Aaron first met me, we were quite civil, we were quite friendly, and I didn't hate him at all. I don't have a problem with him. I understand he's just as much of a survivor of this as I am, and that's fine, but there have been a lot of people who've tried to drive wedges between us, and there's a lot of layers and programs going on and triggering and all kinds of horrific things that have happened as a result that have caused a bit of a communication breakdown between me and him, and that's unfortunate, and I wish him well, and he can call me anytime he wants, but he chooses not to. That's fine. I choose not to reach out to him usually because it gets very contentious very quickly. I don't know if it's him or me or both of us, but something gets activated and it's very hard. But yes, he has admitted that he has participated in taking me in a MyLab, or effectively, for all intents and purposes, has admitted it. The terminology is a little sort of, he sort of keeps it at arm's length slightly, but he definitely admitted that it's entirely possible that it could have been him that did this, because when I started recovering memories of five men in my bedroom at night, four of whom were in black tactical gear, I could be blending memories about the fifth man because I saw him in camo, but that could have been a blended memory. But then I described to the letter the protocol of a military abduction, and I'd never read anything about that. I didn't know what that entailed, nor did I want that. I wasn't seeking that out. So that was interesting.
Do you feel comfortable sharing a little of the detail with us?
Well, sure. I've talked about this in several other interviews before, but for brevity's sake, yeah, it was one of the most traumatic things that's ever happened to me. In 2006 or so, I started having, over the series of about two nights, I had two of the scariest dreams I've ever had in my life. And they weren't really unusual, except for the fact that in this quote-unquote dream I had, and it could have been a dream of a memory, but I had this dream of a blonde man standing in the foot of my bed at night in my bedroom, and I'm awoken somehow, and I just see this man in the dark in my bedroom, and there's a street lamp outside my window normally, so there's a little light coming through, but he's yelling at me and pointing the largest gun I've ever seen in my life at me, my face, and he's maybe 5 feet away from me, 10 feet away from me while he's doing this, and he's screaming so much that I can see the spit coming out of his mouth and his face becoming red even in the semi-darkness. He's getting really upset, and he's saying, if you effing say that again, I'll shoot you, and if you effing move, I'll kill you. Something to that effect. And my heart, I've never been so scared in my entire life. I feel like I'm going to die of fright. And I wake up, and I'm just jolted from this dream. It was this horrible dream. And then the next night, I had the same dream again, and it was horrible. And not long after that, I had, I found myself, before my eyes were open, I was running. Somehow I had gotten out of my bed when I was still asleep, and I was running to try and escape. And right before I smacked myself into the closet door in my bedroom, I woke up, like the second before. I woke up, and that's never happened to me before. And that was weird, and that got me kind of panicked because I was like, something is wrong here. I'd never had sleep disorders before, and this happened. And then not long after that, in 2007, I went out with a woman after work who I worked with just for drinks on a Friday night. Well, maybe that was 2006. I'm sorry. It's still 2006. And I remember going with her after work. I don't even remember this woman. That's the weird thing. But I know somehow in my mind, I know that I worked with her. And she's a blonde woman about 5'2" or 5'3", but I can't remember for the life of me who this woman is. But somehow I know that I work with her. I was working at some... At that time, I was just really underemployed and broke, and I was working at a telemarketing place just to pay the bills. And she went out for drinks with me at a bar. I had approximately 1.5 beers in a pint glass. And then the next thing I know, I'm in a cab driving along the FDR Expressway going to my home, and I don't remember anything about getting home at all. And then the next day, I wake up with all of the blankets and sheets on the bed that are they're on the floor. I'm still in my clothes from the night before, and I'm face down, facing diagonally on the mattress, with no memory of getting home and a fierce, fierce, fierce thirst like you can't imagine. The most thirsty for water I've ever been in my entire life, and a feeling of being drugged, of having been drugged, just a grogginess. And coming to and not knowing what had happened the night before and not knowing where I was, and for hours just being confused and scared because I didn't know what had happened and who had put me there. Because I can guarantee you I don't sleep facing down diagonally on the bed without sheets or blankets. That's not how I sleep. And coming to in my clothes from the night before. And then I looked on the sheet, and there were three black claw marks going straight down. They looked like charcoal marks going straight down the side of the bed, as if someone had left some kind of charcoal smear with their fingers. And I remember dragging the fitted sheet off the bed and hiding it and putting it in a bag and saying to myself, that's evidence, and not knowing why I was saying that. And, of course, that sheet has disappeared. It's no longer there. Mm. Why would I do that, you know? So that led me to believe for about a good year before I woke up that something weird had happened. But I had never heard of MyLabs before. I didn't know what that was. I thought I had just been roofied. I thought someone had put something in my drink, and somehow a good Samaritan brought me home somehow. But why, like, there had been no evidence of sexual abuse or being raped or anything like that. But I felt really weird that whole day, just very out of sorts. And I've since found that that's classic textbook. I don't know about the three claw marks or black charcoal marks on the sheath part, but I've since found out that that is typical of MyLabs. That's exactly what happened. And then what happened was in 2010, I had already woken up. I had a UFO experience on August 15th, 2008. That was officially, I think, the beginning of my real awakening. Prior to that, about 9 months prior, I had a really weird experience in late 2007 that involved, it was either a hologram or something or a human ET. I have no idea, but I had a telepathic interaction that was amazing with a man who I believe was from outer space. I don't think he was from Earth. He certainly didn't look like any human I'd ever seen on Earth, but he was human. That sort of got the ball rolling for me to become completely obsessed with UFOs and ETs, which is, I've since learned, typical for experiencers and contactees to just become like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters, where you just have news clippings on the wall and you're just suddenly obsessed out of nowhere with UFOs, which is what happened to me for about 9 months. And then I had this awakening experience with a UFO that telepathically communicated with me in August of 2008. And then my third eye was opened, and I suddenly was, I couldn't stop doing psychic readings to save my life. I was literally going up to people because I couldn't help myself and would start doing readings for them. And they would say, yes, how did you know that? And I couldn't stop it, so I had to walk out of my day job and never return to that because I couldn't not do this, and I couldn't figure out a way to figure it into a 9-to-5 regular job, because every job I would go for would have been ruined probably just because I'd be doing readings for everyone. So that went on, and then in 2010, a mutual friend of Aaron's who I knew by happenstance, after I told her, I think I'm a MyLab. I think I had seen like a Melinda Leslie interview or something, and it just triggered something in me so violently that I couldn't believe it. And I didn't want to look at it further. I shut it down. I didn't look at it for a while. But upon watching one of those interviews about MyLabs, I can't remember the exact one, it triggered something in me that was sort of on the back burner for a good year. And by 2010, I couldn't take it anymore because I was seriously starting to examine that series of dreams I had in 2006, 2007 or so. And then what had happened that strange night, coming home from the cab and not remembering coming home. So I asked this friend, and she's very intuitive herself, and she said, you might want to talk to Aaron McCollum about this. And I said, really? That seems a bit odd. Are you sure? She said, yeah, I think you should speak with him. I don't know why, but I think it'll be good. And so I wanted to research him. I watched his first interview with Project Camelot. And the weird thing is, as I watched it, this is what's very strange about this, it didn't resonate with me at all. But what would happen is about 10 minutes into watching the video, something would go numb in my head. And I would have to look away. And I would just turn the video off and get distracted and do something else. And so this happened over the course of about 5 months, where it got to the point where I just had to force myself to watch this thing for some reason. And it took about a week and a half to watch the full interview, because it's about a two-hour interview, and I could only watch it in 10-minute increments. And then on the last day I watched this, within 45 minutes of finishing his interview, I swear to God, Aaron McCollum asked for my friendship on Facebook. And I was stunned because I saw his name in the friend request column, and I had to do a double take. I couldn't believe it. And I emailed him immediately, and I said, did our mutual friend contact you about me? And he said, no, I haven't spoken to her in a while. And so then I knew we had to speak immediately at once, and it was within a day we had had a Skype session, and within 5 minutes of seeing him in real time and for some reason hearing his real time voice, not recorded, I broke down and started sobbing and kept saying over and over again, I recognize you, I recognize you, I recognize you. And that's what got the ball rolling. And then without him front loading me at all, he was very, very good about this, he said, what do you remember? And it was like a flood of things. I told him about the man standing in the room with the gun and this dream and then what had happened to me over the next several days. And then he said, well, that's, you just described a man in my unit. And that made me cry even more. And then all of a sudden it was like a memory came just from him saying that. I saw four other men in black tactical gear after he showed me an outfit that they would wear. And that triggered me like nobody's business. And I saw these four other people. I didn't know that five people usually go in a unit to do a MyLab. That's typically the number, four, five, or six, I guess. But that's usually pretty steadfastly the number five. And there were four other people in addition to this man standing around my bed. And then all of a sudden I saw Aaron. I heard his voice when I spoke to him. And in this memory, he's holding my left wrist open as if he's about to inject me with something, which, in fact, he wound up doing. And I remember thinking and saying without thinking, just blurting it out, I said, you don't have to do this, as he was ready to inject me with something. And I remember it was his voice, and he said, I have to. But it sounded very monotonous. It sounded very monotone, like he was under heightened suggestion or some kind of mind control. He sounded like a robot when he said it. And he has since said, well, about 80% of the MyLabs that he did, he was not under mind control at all. He was fully conscious. But he said it's entirely possible that this was so above whatever the protocol was normally that they could have put me into an altered state to do this one. But then he remembered something that had happened to another guy in his unit that night that he refused to talk about. He could describe the layout of my building to the letter, which was really crazy. When I showed him a Google Earth photograph of my building, he described the interior to the letter, which made me cry. And then there were just too many corroborations that led me to believe that this had happened and that it was not just a planted memory. And he told me that he had taken me, after they had drugged me with a very high-grade illegal version of Rohypnol that the CIA creates, I'm knocked out, I don't remember a thing after that point, and they took me to an underground facility. I live in New York City, and they would have taken me for this particular instance to an underground facility located directly under Harvard University for remote viewing purposes, according to him. Now, I would take issue with that because, according to Hal Putoff and all those First Earth Battalion guys, they had a whole, literally an army load of men who could do excellent remote viewing. So I don't know why they would need a civilian to do remote viewing for them. And I personally believe that there were really hardcore experimentations that they did, and I'm getting recovered memories since that time that have to do with truly outlandish telekinesis experiments that involve harming people and blowing things up with my mind. And I know that I can consciously remote influence people, but I don't do it very much unless it's with their permission or, you know, for truly benevolent purposes with permission only. And I know how to do this consciously, and I don't know why or how. And I know that under the right conditions, I could probably be pretty terrifying if given the right code words and combination of drugs and, you know, the perfect storm kind of scenario. I could probably be really scary. And in fact, since then, there's a woman that I've met online who I am 99% sure she's been used as a psychic partner with me on experiments where we blew things up as a military, as a weaponized research and development experiment. And we could do it.
Wow.
And I have lots of memories like this, where I'm blowing things up and denting things and harming things and killing things with my mind. And I know that sounds fantastic. I know that sounds just unbelievable. But this is all I can say. This is all I can provide as evidence right now, is just the corroborations that I have with other people and the experiences that I am directly recovering. I'm not making this up, that's for sure. But do with that what you will. That's essentially what my MyLab experience was. Some people have experiences with aliens involved as well. And while I don't have any direct memories of aliens in any of the military experiments I have that are what you would consider non-human, I do have recovered memories of, again, telekinesis experiments yet again at places that look an awful lot like they could be in the American Southwest, perhaps White Sands, New Mexico, perhaps Los Alamos National Laboratories. Now, what's interesting is I filmed an episode for Jesse Ventura's show, Conspiracy Theory, at the Dulce, what was allegedly one of the areas for the Dulce base, the notorious Dulce base that everyone says allegedly either exists or doesn't exist, that is a sort of co-operational military base in New Mexico. I went there. I was fine until we got to this one spot that was supposedly where the military auxiliary surveillance unit was. And I flipped out the minute my foot hit the ground when I got out of the car. And you see it on TV. You see, it's kind of embarrassing, but that's real. That's unscripted. I flipped out. I was so emotionally distraught. It was a very difficult day for me. And later on, I had a very strong drink to try and calm my nerves that I spilled all over the table because I was so nervous, because I just couldn't calm down after that. It was very, very hard. And That wasn't scripted. That was my natural reaction. I got triggered. And I definitely think that's one of the areas where the Dulce Base entrance could be. And it was very, very traumatizing for me because I think I've probably been there before without ever actually consciously having been to New Mexico prior to that experience. So I don't know what this is, but somebody's messing with me. And it's not me. It's somebody else. And I would like to prosecute the hell out of the people that have done this to me. Now, again, with the military and industrial implications for this would be that I was being used as a human test subject on stuff they wanted to weaponize and potentially make a profit off of. Because they're not just doing this out of the kindness of their hearts. They want to make money to fund other things. And so they use people like me and other people in my position to try stuff out. And so lo and behold, another woman who is who keeps coming up in Dulce research is a woman by the name of Lady Judge Barbara Thomas. Supposedly she's a hybrid gray ET human. She certainly behaves oddly, and she doesn't look like anybody else, and she dressed kind of eccentrically. Who this woman who I've probably been in military experiments with in underground facilities, who we did psychic warfare on things and tested explosive devices and things like that with our minds. She also remembers this woman, and she'd never seen a photo of this woman before, and I mentioned her name, and she said she described her to the letter. When I showed her the photo, she flipped out of this woman. She's involved with tech commercialization projects, which, if you know how to read between the lines on that, for Los Alamos National Laboratories is reverse-engineered tech from, surprise, surprise, crashed alien craft, usually. Or from ET exchanges that the U.S. government has, sort of trinkets in exchange for the ongoing abuse that the hidden alien agenda will do on the American populace and others. Mm-hmm. So when you want to use occultism for that, mind control works its way into that. And if you want to confuse things and muddy the waters, occultism works really well for that. And that is a part of the fabric of the American culture. It's just a hidden part of it, but it's hiding in plain sight in many respects. And I would highly recommend that if you are interested in America, you are shooting yourself in the foot if you think or if you arrogantly assume that any of these people I've mentioned are not interested in at least one of the above subjects that I've talked about. You are kidding yourself if you think these people are not interested in it. Now, to mention briefly upon what you're talking about, the Hollywood mind control complex.
Well,
I have personally... Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to be interrupting you, but we are coming close to the end. I'm waiting for my man behind the scenes there to give me the final word of how much time is up, but I know we're coming into like the last 5-10 minutes max of this broadcast. So we've got 5 minutes going on here. So,
okay.
Yeah, I really want to thank you with my whole heart for sharing that. What you're sharing is you are America's child. You know, you and Aaron, I had the honor of bringing Aaron McCollum on the Alchemy of Light broadcast as well. I'll repost that interview at the top of the... I'll put that on the alchemyoflight.org blog for people, because this is real. This is real America, too. This is what goes on behind the scenes. This is what the tax dollars and the drug monies and all of the addictions that American people are subjected to, and the biggest mind control experiment going on the planet Earth, I swear, is America. And we didn't get there, and we're not going to get there in this interview. But what we did was a whole lot to break the ice and to begin the conversation of really exploring the bigger picture, you know, beyond hot dogs and apple pie. There's a lot going on here, and it can't possibly be covered in 2 hours or even 20 hours of that, but it can't be covered at all unless people take a serious interest and you know, open their hearts to human beings. This is a human being. Anya Briggs is a human being. You know, and this is not making up a story. She's sharing with us the truth from her heart. And so I really just want to thank you so much. We'll have to wrap it up now. And I want to take this very brief moment to encourage people, if they want to learn more about Anya, please visit her blog. Anya is a channel.blogspot.com. And do you want me to give your email address as well?
Absolutely. It's Anya is a channel at gmail.com. I am available for psychic readings. If you wish to hire me for a session, feel free to contact me there. And the only thing I was going to add about the Hollywood mind control thing is it's real. Look into it. It's real. But yes. I am available for appointments. Just email me, anyaisachannel@gmail.com. I'll be happy to accommodate you. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. And I want to thank the powers that be, the powers that all are, our friends in high places who allowed this broadcast to be uninterrupted, who facilitated the clarity in the connection. I really want to thank all of the beings that were able to reestablish Anya's clear voice being shared with all of us. And I want to thank the ancestors who have walked before us in sharing the truth that we are now walking in celebration of the work that they have done before us. And let us celebrate this awakening. It is such an exciting time. We can do so much and will do so much for the true good of humanity as we clear away this splinter in our eyes. Thank you so much to the ancestors. Thank you, BBS. Thank you, Dawn. Thank you for making this possible. And I'm Jamil Graham. This is the Alchemy of Light broadcast. And you can learn more about me, what I'm up to, alchemyoflight.org. And now I'm going to pass the final word to you, Anya. Would you like to offer a final word in our last 2 minutes?
Thank you so much, Jamil. Well, in addition to all of those wonderful people and beings and energies you just thanked, I want to add to that, I just want to thank God I'm alive and I'm here to speak this truth. And I thank the Constitution, and I thank the Founding Fathers for this glorious day. And let's make the most of it. You know, let's make haste while the sun shines. Let's make hay while the sun shines, because we have a lot of work to do in terms of waking up and waking others up. And it begins with a series of conversations and dialogues like this one. And true democracy doesn't happen if you're censored and you're not allowed to speak out. And so every time you can speak out about a provocative, verboten, forbidden subject like this, it is a blow for the powers that be that want to destroy real, true democracy and a republic like this one that was based on what the Founding Fathers had in mind. And I appreciate your time, and God bless you all, and have a fun holiday, and stay safe.
Great. Until next time, take good care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Bye-bye.